Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah. That's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyfoot Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Palo di Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Tommy Bird Ridge Winery.
Joy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com.
Dunkle.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Belvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful night. They're happy.
That's right. Very nice. And it's a very cool 88 degrees here, so very nice.
Yeah, I have to tell you something. I was out at the winery yesterday mowing, getting ready for the festival this weekend, and I left there about 2, I guess, was a little after 2, got into the car, and the temperature in the car said 91 degrees. I started to head west back home. I went through a thunderstorm that we have all the time here in Florida, and they just pop up and dump rain on us, and they disappear, and you know, we're so used to it. But in the middle of the thunderstorm, the temperature on the car showed 77 degrees. It dropped 14 degrees. And then by the time I got out of this thunderstorm and went a little bit further, now this is the distance of a total of like 10 miles from 91 to 77, then back up to 91 again, within a distance of about 10 miles going through that thunderstorm. I just... Whoa, you know, it was strange, really. But, yeah,
wow.
It's Florida. That's what happens. Yeah,
yeah they do pop up here. So we're sitting right now. I don't know if it's sunny there, but, yeah, we have cloudy, but not too bad. They have been popping up. But welcome to the show. And if you want to get on the program and talk about wine with us, do it. Get on the call right now. Get on the whatever you call it, switchboard. There you go, 646-727-3235. Talk to Ron, and let's talk about wine on All About Wine, because that's what it's all about, right? Most of the time.
That's it. Yeah.
Most of the time. That's what it's all about. There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
And if you're listening to an archive, don't call.
No, no.
Because we're not here.
Not, if it's not Thursday, July 3rd, do not call.
Yeah, that's right.
people are like, wait a minute, it's the 24th, though.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Live call. Yeah. Welcome back.
And again, as every week, we have to give our little quick promo to Mike the DJ. Live on every Friday and Saturday nights. You can contact, you can go through and getting a hold of him through Mike the DJ. Oh, no, it's
Radio DJ Mike.
Radio DJ Mike. Okay, geez.
.com. There you go. That's
yeah,
right.
RadioDJMike.com. That's what it is.
Thank
I was
you.
Getting ahead of myself there.
Right. That
so
works. That works. Thank you.
You can connect to his radio program and all that. And so do it. Listen. Tune in. Get in touch with him. Make requests. You can IM him or whatever. He likes to be distracted from doing the other stuff. So.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. That's good.
So,
all right.
We were talking last week. I got to bring this up. Again, I said I was out mowing yesterday, and when you're sitting on the riding lawnmower bouncing around the yard mowing, you have a lot of free time just to think because it doesn't take a whole lot of brain power to ride around and mow the lawn. And I was thinking, we were talking last week about name designation for cheeses. And how the European Union is starting to talk about name designation for cheeses and wanting to keep their names. Now, what I was thinking about is what's going to happen to certain names that are within the names of food. Example, and this is the main one I thought about, eggplant parmesan. All right? Now, if eggplant parmesan is made with Kraft parmesan cheese, can they still call it eggplant parmesan, or would they have to change the name of that also?
Well, can Kraft still use that name because does their cheese actually come from Parma? What did it say, Parma, Italy or something we're talking about?
I think
about?
So, yeah.
Like
yeah.
It has to be regional. Everything's being regionalized now, or they're trying to. So you can't really use that name, or they're trying to make it to where you can't use that name unless it actually comes from you know, little where they make it.
The actual
basically.
Name doesn't. It's like wines, you know.
Yeah.
We talked, you
yeah.
know, it's like wines and all that. So, but if you make an eggplant parmesan and not use real parmesan cheese, can you still call it eggplant parmesan?
Yeah. Wow. That's
I don't know. I don't know. And I'm sure there's other names of different foods out there too. That are named for the specific cheeses. And so because of that, do they have to change all those names or,
Yeah, that's,
I don't know. But
interesting
I was thinking
to see how
that, like I say, while I was mowing, what can be done about eggplant parmesan? If they protect the names and you're not using real parmesan cheese in it, can you still call it eggplant parmesan? I don't know.
No.
But that's just something we were talking about cheese names last week, and I thought about that. So, but I'm gonna go say something here. I got a message on All About Wine BTR. That, by the way, is our Facebook page for those of you out there who don't know it. If you want to get in touch with me, All About Wine BTR on Facebook. I check them, read them, make comments every once in a while about what's going on. But I received this message from a Renee Arozquita, I think it's pronounced, A-R-O-Z-Q-U-E-T-A, Renee Arozquita. She wrote that... she liked to email me, but she couldn't find an address. She said, my name is Renee. I'm a musician in a female folk duet called Silo. She said, I found you while doing promo for the upcoming tour that we're doing, and she was researching radio stations. She says, have you ever visited Peter's Wine Shop? I've never heard of Peter's Wine Shop. I don't visit it. To answer your question, Renee, sorry. She said that they are upcoming. I asked because this is our upcoming Wine Associated Florida show. I want to introduce our music, introduce you to our music in the event I can persuade you to play a clip on your show and promote the wine shop. No, thank you, Renee. We don't do that. I don't want to start getting into that because I can be inundated with all sorts of peoples and stuff. But thank you for the email. She said, I would also like to personally invite you to the show in Port Orange, which I would love to be able to go over to it, but again, I booked it here because I myself love to learn and enjoy the vino, especially the dark, chocolatey, fruity bouquets of Cab and Malbecs. And then she said, give us a listen if you got a minute. Thank you, and cheers, Renee. Their site, S-I-L-O-L-A, S-I-L-O-L-A, dot bandcamp bandcamp.com. If y'all want to check it out, check it out. That's a site that's they are a female duet that is playing around different places on that. She's originally, according to her Facebook page, from Louisiana. I guess her partner, her duet, is also from that area too. As far as I know, it didn't mention it on the Facebook page, but if you want to check them out, you can check them out. I'm not going to play a clip. I would start, like I said, would be inundated with requests to do stuff like that, and you know, don't want to do that. But maybe that's Mike like might on his show.
And that's what I was just going to say. That's what I do.
That's what you do. Yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh.
So okay. you can check that out. Mike, S-I-L-O-L-A dot bandcamp dot com or S-I-L-O band, S-I-L-O B-A-N-D dot com.
Okay.
Either one of those two. That's the two links that she gave me here. And
all right.
So maybe, you know, maybe they're up-and-coming, you know, Tall Tale Digital Tunes, you know. They've got, yeah, so, Renee, okay. If you pulled up that siloband.com, Renee is the one on the left in the picture. So,
okay.
Silo Band.
Cool.
And they're going to be at July 24th. Tonight they're playing in Tampa.
What?
Yeah. You know,
see that
on their webpage. Go to siloband.com. Or this is siloola.com bandcamp.com.
All right.
And you'll see it's silo band.com.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll see the picture of the two girls. And then on the right-hand side, shows in July 24th at the Teriyamishi in Tampa. So they're playing in town tonight.
Okay. Well, we'll see.
Oh. But, you know, they got dates coming up in Pensacola and Mobile, Alabama, and then more shows listed and all that. But check out the website, any of you out there who are interested in it, and tune in on Mike's show. He might be able to play a clip for you sometime. So, but they sent me the email I want to pass on. I'm not going to play a clip, but I am going to, you know, tell you about them and all that. Thank you, Renee, for listening to the show anyway. That's always something we appreciate, too. And, hey, you got a plug. So anybody out there, if you're interested in Silo Band, haven't heard them, so I'm not going to say they're good, they're bad, they're mediocre. But there you go. Few things here. Screw caps dominate United Kingdom and Australian wine markets. This is something that I saw, and I wanted to just pass this on. There is that big contingent of people out there who say, I will never use screw caps. They are inferior and all that stuff. But they're starting to take over in the United Kingdom and Australian wine markets. Wine sealed with the screw cap dominate those markets, according to a new report published by Wine Intelligence. screw caps gained ground in terms of both the U.S. and Australian wine markets, but the U.S. has a little bit different attitude, the article said. According to the report, 55% of respondents in Australia say they like buying wines with screw cap, compared to 38% opting for natural cork. Oh, and I'm sure Irene King's going to listen to this, and she's going to go, what? Yeah, sorry, Irene. This is the report. The affinity levels in the UK show screw cap and natural cork level at on about 40%, while in the U.S., only 21% say they like mine with a screw cap, while 64% who like natural cork. There you go, Renee. It's right. I'm sorry, Irene. It's right back in the figures that you like. The discrepancy is thought to be closely correlated with the frequency of use. 70% of the consumers in the United Kingdom and Australia report buying wine with a screw cap over the past 4 weeks. And it says also that the greatest differential found among American drinkers in three markets. The U.S. market, the average expected price of wine sealed with natural cork is $15.85 versus $9.42 for wine sealed with a screw cap. So people think that it's going to cost less if it's a screw cap. And that's, you know, that's just averages there, but that's the mindset. The president or the CEO of Wine Intelligence said this year's data suggests that screw cap has consolidated its hold as the industry standard closure in the UK and Australia, but also confirms that Americans still have quite a different attitude. Yeah, we do. There is some evidence that screw cap is making inroads in the U.S., with 42% of consumers saying they have bought a screw cap wine in the past 4 weeks. But it seems that a significant minority of consumers remain convinced about the closure's merit. So, there you go. Screw cap is making headways in all sorts of stuff. What was it? It was, I'll check it here real fast and I'll let you know. Back on 6/14, we talked to Stiletto Winery, and they use screw caps. They use screw caps in all their wines, so, and as does a lot of them that we're getting. But they are located, again, in Italy, and they're shipping to the United States. So screw cap is making progress, making inroads. Japanese grapes smash record price. Japanese grapes. We talked a few years ago about what they're growing. I don't want to switch to the Hong Kong edition. It says Japanese grapes smash record price. According to a report in the Japan Times, bidding soared during an auction of prized Ruby Roman table grapes from the Ishikawa Prefecture. And they don't call them states there, they call them prefectures. In total, around 30 bunches, each weighing about 800 grams, were put up for auction to mark the beginning of the buying season for this delicacy. While the first bunch is understood to have sold for about £575, the top price, 3,160 pounds, was paid by a wedding hall operator for the city of Kanazawa. By comparison, champagne grapes today cost around 5 pounds per kilo. So, wow. I mean, I would like the bridal couples to savor them and have a special memory, the Japanese buyer told Japanese News. In total, around 16,000 bunches of Ruby Roman grapes were expected to go on sale this year. The variety was only introduced in 2008, and strict quality regulations govern its sale, requiring each grape to weigh over 20 grams with a sugar level of 18%. Huh. Ruby Roman. Mike, if you've got a second there in between your tweets, check out Ruby Roman for me, if you'll. R-U-B-Y-R-O-M-A-N. Ruby Roman grapes. I and we'll let you tell us about them when you find it. But very expensive for the Ruby Roman. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. I never heard of Ruby Roman. I'm going, you know, we'll see if Mike can't find something on it and tell us what that is all about there.
It's a variety of table grape grown and marketed entirely in Ishikawa Prefecture, Japan.
Oh.
It's red in color and about the size of a ping pong ball.
Wow.
Wait, are those... That sounds large, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That is large. The ping pong ball, that's large. Wow.
That's what it says. The first Ruby Roman grapes went on sale in August 2008 for 100,000 Japanese yen, or it says U.S. $910 per 700-gram bunch, or
wow.
$26 per grape.
What? Jeez.
That doesn't make any sense. Well, I guess the size of the ping pong ball.
Yeah.
It's a lot of juices or something in there. A lot of fruit in there. Okay. The Ruby Roman has strict rules for selling. Each grape must be over 20 grams and over 18% sugar. There's also a special premium class, which requires the grape to be over 30 grams, and the entire fruit bunch must weigh at least 700 grams. Okay.
Jeez.
That's interesting.
That it is. Never heard of that.
Never heard of it. Nope.
No.
Nope.
Wow. Well, there's something that we learned tonight on the program. We'll have to see if we can't find someone who's a little bit more of an expert on the Ruby Roman grape and see if we can't find out more about that. Let me make a note here. Ruby Roman. And Japan. Well, like you say, it's grown only in the Ishikawa Prefecture. So, all right. Oh, I just had a... we have cats, and they were just upset with each other. That wasn't me hitting my engineer. It was the cats. There's something new. The Ruby Roman grape on that. All right. Let me find something else. That's some more information that I want to pass on to you. Will El Nino be enough to break the California drought? You know, they're predicting El Nino coming in now. They're saying that it should be hitting us, any time. El Nino, El Nino, La Nina? The El Nino is the one where the water, or the patterns change and the water cools down and all that, but this says this is out of the Ag Professional magazine, and it says California struck in an impressive drought for nearly a year. Drought conditions have dominated the state's landscape. According to the latest drought monitor, 79% of the state is in extreme or exceptional drought as of July 8th. And most of it now they have a map there. They're showing that most of it goes from the San Francisco Bay all the way down to L.A. And goes inland quite a ways. I mean, that's basically the Central Valley and all along the Highway 101, Big Sur Coast and stuff like that. And that's where it is the most severe. And then you also have up in the northern part of the state a couple of areas in the northern part of the state, one over in the eastern part of Northern California, and then one coming in off the coast. But Napa and Sonoma are not affected by this, not as severe. This is the severe map, and it's not showing that. And then down in the southeast part of the state, the you know, desert, Mojave Desert, and Death Valley and all that is the least affected by the map, so, or by the drought. But it says the conditions have stressed the state's water reserves thin, and the solar desalination plants are really being taxed to try to get water out to the regions that they need it. And the state is even considering imposing a fine of up to $500 a day for overwatering your lawns or washing cars without nozzles on the hoses. Wow. Most of the regulations proposed are aimed at reducing outdoor water use in cities and some areas for more than half the residents' daily water use accounts for it in the outside. The drought is of historic proportions. Many urban water users don't realize how bad the drought is, and they're not actually, they don't see the communities running out of the water, and they don't see the streams and creeks running dry, so therefore they think everything is okay. For months, they have been eyeing the development of the El Nino for relief, but NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, is saying something different. They believe that El Nino will still develop and peak during late fall or early winter, and it won't be the super El Nino predicted earlier. The reports are saying they're downgrading the fact and they're still worrying about the long-term drought because the El Nino is not going to be the the big lifesaver in the drought in California. So bad news on that. And, you know, we've discovered this over and over that the California furnishes wine grapes all over the country. Every time we've talked to different wineries around the country, they always mention getting some grapes from California. So as long as that drought's going, it's going to be it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Gallo Family Winery. Now, let me bring this up again here. I'm going to talk about this real quick here about their program for corks. If for every cork that is sent to Gallo from the Gallo family of corks between now and the end of the year, they will donate $1 to the Senior Meals on Wheels program. So for every dollar, or for every cork in the Gallo family, send it in or collect it all together if you know other people who do that, and at the end of the year, send it in. But a great cause. They did it last year, raised like $750,000, and they're on doing it again this year. Yay for Gallo. Speaking of Gallo, though, the Gallo family, which owns one of the world's biggest wine producers, has been named one of the richest families in the United States. The winemaking operation that Ernest and Julio Gallo started in a shed in California in the 1930s has developed into a family empire worth an estimated $9.7 billion. That's with a B. The Gallos ranked 25th in the 2014 Forbes list of America's richest families. That puts them in the same wealth bracket as the Bush family that used to own Budweiser, and the Brown family of the Brown Foreman, former owners of Fetzer Vineyards. E&J Gallo Winery has estimated annual sales of $3.6 billion and employs more than 5,000 people globally. It owns nearly 6,500 hectares of vineyards and has 9 wineries spread across California and Washington State. Its biggest rival, Constellation Brands, owned by Robert Mondavi Wines, has been focused of getting rid of some of its bulk wine industry, and Gallo's looking at possibly picking that up. Gallo acquired Ledgewood Creek Winery and vineyard in Solano County, and it's bought its estate and the wines and the grapes and everything from that just recently. So Gallo Winery is now 25th in richest families in the world. Wow. That's a lot of wine. That is a lot of wine. California drought's cutting into the grape production. We knew this was happening. We knew this was going on. But here's an article that's talking about it as soon as it loads here. But we know that the drought's going to cut back on the grapes. Even though the grapes do have an ability to seek water, it still is hurting the production on it. The summer sizzle is what they're calling it. It's helping grapevines rapidly mature in Central California. And a lot of those grapes in Central California are used just for your standard table grapes that you hear and find all over the place. So despite the drought, experts say the vines will produce a good crop in an area the wine industry relies on heavily, which is true. I mean, that the San Joaquin Valley Wine Growers Association said 100% of all the grape concentrate made in Florida comes from within about 100 miles of Fresno. Wow. But not all concentrate becomes wine. Most of the red concentrate goes to wine. It's a coloring additive. It's a great product, perfectly natural, but a lot of it goes into fruit juices as a sweetener. Huh. So the grapes themselves don't go into the wine. Valley wine growers gathered in Fresno to hear about the grape production, which has been down slightly from the past 2 years. The president of the California Association of Wine Growers says the grapes are a little smaller, and because of the lack of water, that does tend to have an effect on the quality of the winemakers are looking for. They are slightly smaller berries. Some growers are scrambling to secure enough water. It's an ongoing thing. It's the nature of producing quality wine grape that you really want to stress the wine grape vine to enhance the quality. But the high heat is putting too much stress on the vines. Many of the wells in the Central Valley have gone dry. They've dug in deeper, but they're having problems. Deepening old wells is very costly, and the yield is not the kind of results they're looking for. Grape growers who can't pump groundwater face a painful summer. Vallis said, without any relief, it is going to have a major effect on the physiology of the vine and will cause major permanent damage going forward. So they said a lot of the grape growers are thinning their crop this year because of the uncertainty over the irrigation supply. So, it's affecting everything everywhere. This is from ABC Action News in Fresno that came out with that report there. But it's happening everywhere. I think I said this last week, too. There's something else I want to bring up again here is the fact that wine is not as good for the heart as previously suggested, which, we can ignore this report, I think. But, no, they're saying that the wine is not as good for the heart. A recent study shows that that over the past 2 years, about 2 years ago, they showed that wine, red wine, was good for the heart. Now they're saying that the old report says that 42% after having a heart attack or stroke, 42% of the people would be less likely to die by having two glasses of red wine a night compared to not having any. Now they're saying just the opposite. You should abstain from it completely. It's not helping you recover from a heart attack or a stroke. And the biggest factor is your BMI, body mass index, and things like that. 56 different studies were considered during this report. It was done by the University of Pennsylvania, London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and the University College London. So the big schools that did this. Those who drank little to nothing of wine did get lower BMIs and normal blood pressure. They're saying a lot of it has to do with genetic predisposition more so than just having a glass or two of wine. So if you are out there drinking wine because you've had a stroke or a heart attack, they're saying that it's not as good for you. But, hey, I think I would rather have the wine than sit around and not have it and say, oh, well, okay. So that's just how I would look at it. Let me get pull up something else here. There we go. I mentioned this. I believe either I mentioned during the program or Mike and I were talking about it. But well, that's not what I want. Wine Spectator magazine came out with an article about a casino in Napa Wine Country. The Mishawalwapo people want the government to recognize their tribe. And because of that, they wanted, yes, I did talk about this on the air, I believe. I do remember that. But in 1968, the Napa Valley Agricultural Reserve was established to protect the land in Napa Valley. And its basic tenet of this organization was agriculture is the highest and best use of the land, period. And so that's why the wineries are the vineyards and all that. But in recent years, when a tribe acquires land, a casino follows. And the Indians, the Mishawalwapo, that's Mishawalwapo, Mishawalwapo Indians, say that the land is actually yours and they want it. And they're saying that it should be theirs. There are now more than 60 Native American-owned casinos in California alone. Sonoma's Groton Rancheria tribe opened the latest this past November after achieving recognition in 2000 and acquiring 254 acres in Runnard Park. So it's happening up there in that area and all that, but Napa is fighting it. They're saying that it's going to be a battle. If they do get it, it could be years and years before they get around. They said a casino would destroy everything that we've been trying to protect in Napa. So it's a battle, and it will be a continuing battle, I am positive, for years to come, because it's something like that is not just going to go away. They're going to continue trying to do something. So as we get information over the years, we'll still be on over the years. As we get information over the years, we will pass that on to you. Let's see. Here's something that we are always talking about organics. We've talked about organic wines and the use of organics and even biodynamic. But here is an article out of Organic Wine Journal. And there is such a thing, Organic Wine Journal. It says, just because you make organic wine doesn't mean you can export organic wine. Since in the States, we can't say we're organic. We use PMS, nothing to do with moods at certain phases of the moon, to add sulfur in the winery, and that is forbidden under U.S. organic regulations. We can, however, as of this year, say that wine is made using organically grown grapes, and we have to get a COLA to approve each and every label we export into the States. This all has to be overseen by our importers, for whom I am sure it is logistical pain in the neck. Now, you know, the COLA is the certificate of label approval, and every wine has to do that. Now, if they ship wines in, import organic wines, there has to be a special COLA for that, a special label for that, and the importers are responsible for that. It says, in Europe, we can say that we are organic wine. It has to be written exactly thus, organic wine, and we can give our BioGrow certification. However, if we do so, we not only have to courier original copies of all certifying paperwork for each shipment, no electronic copies here, because fraudulently claiming to be organic would be the end of the world, right? And this I'm quoting here. but our importers also have to apply for and pay for a special license to be allowed to import and sell organic wine. It can be a real hindrance to sales to smaller importers who balk at the cost and general faffing involved. That's why probably we don't see a whole lot of organic wines from other countries on the shelves because of this. So this is a good example of what we've written about before. The cost and time burdens are put on the winemakers who are just doing things the way they've been done for centuries. Mostly they just want to claim what they are not doing. Modern winemaking techniques that have changed the definition of wine. It should be the other way around. The Wine Organic News addresses this also with a short paragraph. Yet, if you decide to round up, other herbicides are available, everything to within an inch of its existence, spray your vines with Curante, all-destroying insecticide, at the first sign of anything with wings approaching, do you have to apply for and pay for additional sort of export licenses? Not that I'm aware of. I guess because you just put it on the label. Oh, I guess because you don't put it on the label. So if you put it on the label that you sprayed crazy, you're saying, well, maybe then you need to say that. According to the Twitter page from the Wine Cat, they work in Saracen, New Zealand. That's the ones who wrote this article. Interesting little article here about exporting and importing organic wines. All sorts of rules and regulations and stuff. This is a pretty neat page here. If y'all want to check this out, www.organicwinejournal.com, organicwinejournal.com, organicwinejournal.com. A lot of neat information on here. It's got wineries listed for, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 different areas. It's got reviews. It's got city guides for a couple of cities buying wine, learning about organic. It is a very interesting site, so you might want to check that out, organicwinejournals.com. Let's see. Okay. Oh, here, this is something. Because of global warming, they're saying that the areas to grow grapes is moving further north. Two bands in the world, 40 degrees to 50 degrees north latitude, 35 to 50 degrees southern latitude, or longitude. Latitude's up and down, longitude's long ways. Okay, longitude. Are the main growing regions in the world. These, because of global warming, are moving north. And because of that, the Idaho State Department of Agriculture is going to award $1.75 million in grant funding this year to 19 different projects to benefit the state's specialty crops. Grapevines are part of that. So it's not going to just be potatoes out of Idaho now. They're looking at adding alternative fruits and stuff, and that also includes grapevines. So there is a big push to try to get more grapevines growing in Idaho and the different areas. There's already been some grants handed out. The Idaho Bean Commission will get 56 thousand plus, as do the Idaho Dry Bean Field, 17,000 plus. Idaho Apple Commission will get $113,000 grant, and the Idaho Hop Commission for beer, 68,000 plus. But they are saying that Idaho is looking at $104,000 grant going to fruits, alternative crops, including grapevines. So there is money to be used for crops in Idaho. So that's something that's from the West Ag website, Capital Press, West Ag website out of the Idaho area. So if you are looking at moving to Idaho, there's a crop, and you can probably get some backup for that there. So that's something to look at, along with Texas. We've talked to people in Texas, which hopefully we'll get some more on soon here, but we've talked to wineries in Texas, and they say they are hurting in Texas for vineyards. So if you have the inclination to move to Texas or to grow grapes in Texas, they said they can use every one that you want to grow there. Here's something that I found that was very interesting. We've had the expert on corks back in November. This is something on wine corks here. It says that wine corks may owe quality to gene activity. In a nutshell, it says even the most superb wine won't last without its cork, but the quality of this renewable oaken resource has nosedived in recent years. A new genetic study of trees that produce high and low quality cork divulges some clues behind this decline, hinting at a possible link to climate change. And here we go talk about climate change again. When the guy on the corks was on the program, if you recall, and that was back in November, if you want to check that out in the archives, he said that Portugal, Spain, is the main area for corks, but they do grow corks in other parts of the world. He said China, United States, France, Italy. Some of these have cork oak trees. He said, but the quality is not there. It's not as good a quality as you find in Portugal. Well, if we're getting climate change and it's warming up, it may be an issue. Cork quality has been decreasing over the years. No one knows why, says a Rita Texeira of the University of Lisbon. Producing a fruitful cork tree takes about 50 years, so it's urgent that we start studying reasons behind the downturn now. Great cork safeguards a wine's taste and its aging process, while inferior cork can taint the wine's flavor. Cork is made from the protective outer layer of bark surrounding the Cursus Suber oak tree. That's Q-U-E-R-C-U-S Suber, S-U-B-E-R, which is the oak tree with cork, which grows only in Southwest Europe and Northwest Africa. But the global supply of cork, a $2 billion industry, has faced problems with quality. The Texerian colleagues compared gene activity between the 5 high-quality cork trees and the 5 low qualities, and the good cork had a higher abundance of heat shock proteins, which help other proteins form their correct shapes under the stressful conditions. So it is genes in the cork that are protecting it from the high heat and the droughts and stuff like that. And not all corks have this this heat shock protein. So the trees that have alternative defense against similar stresses also. So genes that produce the phenolic compounds, the brownish UV absorbing chemicals, and these are the ones that are helping keep the corks in higher quality. Genes that temper oxidative stress and fixed DNA damage were elevated in bad corks, whereas the good corks had a good level of the DNA that triggered the UV mutations that help conserve the energy and make them good corks. So DNA in the corks makes it, got a good lineage, making you some good corks. There is... let's see, there's something, where is this? This is the article that I read that I got a chuckle out of, I believe it was. Let me This is, I don't want to mention something because this isn't it, and I don't have the one to read you and tell you about on the one. But maybe so. I had a good class last week. For those of you who missed it, if you check our website, the winery website, and we do, yeah, this is the one. This is out of the Fox 33 or 43 website from Central Pennsylvania. It says, when Laura Bartlett came home from dinner with an unfinished bottle of wine, she had no idea it would spark a new business. I lost the cork and just sealed it with saran wrap and a rubber band, she said. It worked, but my son and I joked that it looked like a condom. A year later, in January 2014, she and her son Mitchell Strahan took the idea to Kickstarter. The campaign raised just over $9,000, surpassing their goal of $7,500. From there, the duo relied on Facebook to find customers and distributors. We started to get direct messages from private wineries in Australia, Spain, and France, and cruise ship companies. These are people we'd normally never have access to. They use Facebook to showcase viral advertising efforts. They recently went to a winery in Texas, and the car was painted with the company's slogan, slogan and logo. We launched a Spot the Car campaign on Facebook to get people interested. The wine condoms started selling last month on the wine company's website, and Bartlett hopes to have them in retail stores soon. Wine condoms is actually, check your Facebook page out. You can check wine condoms, and it's just a little heavy rubber thing that snaps over the top of the wine bottle. So and it comes in a cute little box and everything. But check that out. I got to check out that wine condoms. That was coming out of Pennsylvania on that. So wine condoms, check the Facebook. There's information on it on the Facebook and all that. And let's see, I've got something else. I'm going to pull it quickly here before we leave you and before I let Mike take over and start doing the information about our festival this Saturday. Yes, this is another one this Saturday. And I think... No. Okay. Well, thank you. Mike, I'm going to... Unless I can see something else where you're talking about that, I think I am finished passing on information tonight.
All right. Yeah, I was just reading about the wine condoms on winecondoms.com. That's they're actually actually on back order. So
are they?
they sold out. They said they'll go back. They will. The orders will go out by August the 15th. So okay.
Yeah. 3 weeks away. More than 3 weeks away.
They have a price tag. It looks like $10 on the website. So, but you get Skyped me. You get 10 individually wrapped tuxedo black wine condoms. That's interesting.
10 for $10? That's not bad.
They can be thrown away after use.
Be sure nobody pokes a hole in the end of it with a pen. All right. Well, I'm going to stop.
We definitely need a disclaimer tonight.
Yes.
We will. You have Winefest and there's a couple other cool things coming up as well. So everybody out there, get your calendars ready. I'll wait. All right, maybe not that long. But first, on October the 4th, Florida State's winery, you're going to host the second annual Pasco Pet Fest.
That's right.
This is a big thing. Big thing. If you have a pet or you want one, then you need to plan on visiting Florida State's winery October the 4th. Mark that one down. On October 25th, you have at Florida State's Winery a variety of artists from San Antonio for the San Antonio Art Fest. So that's going to be cool. And that's at the that's at the winery as well, huh?
Yes, it will, yeah.
Oh,
they,
awesome.
They did a small one, what was it, a year ago, I think. It's been about a year ago now. They did a small one there, and it was really, really well received. And so they are very excited about doing this, and we're getting some good response from people, too. So, yes. It's fun. And you can purchase, bring some money. These are young artists. They've got some great stuff. And it's really – we're looking forward to it. They get some beautiful work and all that stuff and different ones. So, yeah, that's coming up.
That's so cool. That's October 25th. So mark your calendars there. Let's see. November 1st, you have PAWS, which is the Pasco Animal Welfare Society, which will be doing a fundraiser. That's November the 1st. And November 15th, Florida State's Winery hosts the West Pasco Kiwanis Fall Fundraiser. So that was, and we talked about this, the last one, really great event, and definitely want to go there on November 15th. And finally, on December 6th, it is the 13th birthday celebration at Florida State's Winery with all sorts of fun and giveaways. So you don't necessarily have to wait until then to visit Florida State's Winery. Those are some major events, of course, that are coming up, and they're a lot of fun and go to a great cause. Speaking of great causes, the tip jar for this month is for the SPCA, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals of Florida. It's a great organization. Stop by and offer something for the tip jar to help out a great cause. And also, if you stop by with a donation of pet food, Raffle Rescue, you get 10% discount on your wine purchase. All right, so definitely go there. Now we'll get on to the Wine Fest information.
Yes.
So hang on a second, let me grab this one and we'll be right back.
Coming up this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it's Wine Fest at Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Come out and enjoy the live music. Relax with a glass of world-class wine. Participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have fun and shop our vendors offering many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. WineFest is a great time to pick up unique gift items. Enjoy your weekend with us at WineFest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery. Located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From I-75, take exit 285 and turn west for approximately 4 miles. See you Saturday at Wine Fest.
I don't remember when I wrote that, but the echo on it sounds like I'm in a bathroom or something. I don't know what that is. But check it out. That's Wine Fest. I just feel like, where was I? Was I in the...
What was?
I don't know. Never know. I don't have a studio set up in there, but hey, there's an idea. But
cool effect.
Come out. Yeah. It's just that echo. I thought, where was I? Come out this Saturday. That's July 26th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. for another great wine fest. And you got all kinds of vendors out there. There's one, obviously, the raffle lady, Lisa with Raffle Rescue Pet Food Assistance Organization of Pasco County is going to be there with two new raffles. So take a chance to give animals a chance for life, and you definitely want to go there and help out the cause as well. And here's something new that I just saw for the first time. I don't know why, but Eileen will bring Black Angus beef and pasture pork, grass-fed, no antibiotics, hormones, or steroids, by the piece or the freezer full. Wow, that's
interesting. That is the first time you saw that. She is a new one. Mm. About 7 miles down the road from us, 7 miles west of us, there is this Black Angus farm, and they actually sell beef there, and you can go and you can pick out a cow and say, I want that one, and they'll dress it out for you and get it all packaged and everything. Or you can buy stuff. She is going to be at the winery at the Wine Fest this weekend with a freezer, so you can come in and you can buy very fresh Black Angus steaks or any number of things, like I said on the, like Mike just mentioned there. So she is a new vendor, and we are really looking forward to this. I mean, if you are into meat, we've got it.
That'd be great. From Lake Kersey Farms, Land O'Lakes, Florida. So that's different. I saw that and I go, wait a minute, what?
Yeah, just down the street from us, really, literally about 7 miles down the road from us.
Yeah, I see that. 1 mile east of Highway 41 and State Road 52 intersection. So, very cool. Let's see, Jim and Sharon will be there with jewelry handcrafted by Sharon, some previously worn pieces and or estate pieces as well. Boxer and Christie, of course, there with their Flame Rock oil candles and all kinds of cool things. There, Scentsy will be represented there with Kathy. Let's see, Sam Osborne is providing the great sounds on the stage there underneath the oak trees. D&D Jams and Jellies will be there. Hats Galore with Susan. Let's see, Susie's Dogs, served by husband Charlie, will be back again with more grilled or boiled hot dogs. Hamburger and cheeseburgers were a big success, and they also have a Meatball Heroes on the menu. Ooh, interesting.
Which is good. It is, yeah. We had one. Oh, that is so good, yes.
That sounds good. It's really cool out there. So come on out. Enjoy. You'll visit the vendors. Meet Ron, the show host, the celebrity that he is, at the winery. You can also get a wine tasting as well. It's a great chance to pick up unique gifts for friends, family members, and just enjoy the weekend at Florida State's winery. The weather is going to be great, and it's always shady underneath the oak trees. The oak trees are huge. It's also pet friendly. Keep in mind, you bring a friendly pet with you.
Yes, thank you.
I got my bear that I just found. Check it out. That's this Saturday, July 26th at Florida State's Winery, and I believe the address 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. So if you're on I-75 or off of 41, get on 52 and head towards between the two of them, something like that.
Right.
I don't know.
No. Simple as that.
So, go to the website also, FloridaStatesWines.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. There's recipes. There's information on wine class, when they are. They come out every 2 weeks, and there's all kinds of cool stuff there. So, and wine facts. Yeah, there's all kinds of neat things on there, and it's definitely a great read. I guess that's all I have for now, because your wine class isn't until August the 10th. So, if you're going to be in the area around that time, make plans for August the 10th to visit the wine class or visit the winery and attend the wine class. Just RSVP at the winery. Please contact the winery and let them know ahead of time.
Yeah, had a good class last week too. It was very good.
Yeah. Cool. It's a great 3 hours. It goes by and you learn a lot and it's very entertaining. So definitely do that. I guess, what else? I guess that's all I have right now. So
I have one more thing, though, before we get off there. I told you, I found what I was looking for here. The question is, I could really do this as a teaser and then say, tune in next week. I won't do that because it drives me nuts when people do that. Who drinks more wine, the Chinese or the Japanese? You would think automatically the Chinese. With their big thirst for the French wines now and how they're getting wine, and we all hear about it. And then the Japanese, the economy sucks there, plus the fact that they're beer drinkers and all that. But that's not true. The Chinese drink per capita has actually fell this past year. It was, according to Wine Intelligence, which is a group questioned 1,193 regular wine and sparkling wine drinkers this April, and the average Japanese adult consumed 3.02 liters of wine in 2013. That's up 11% compared to the previous year, and more than double what the Chinese drink per capita. The 16 largest wine markets They listed it, and Japan is right up there above all the other ones in Asia. The article goes on to talk about the proportion of Japanese drinking wine most days or daily. It's up 46% from previous year, from 2012. They are not buying high-end wines. Rukaten is the market leader, followed by Jusco and Aido Yokkaido. These are the wine stores that they're buying them at. And their prices are going up a little bit because of inflation there. But the long term showing that the Japanese are drinking a lot. It says drilling down the market specifics, wine intelligence says imports dominate Japan's market, with the French wines being the most popular, followed by Chilean, Italian, and Spanish wines. Japanese consumers like Bubbles, they're drinking a lot of sparkling wines, especially from France. Red wines are still the biggest, covering 60% of the market share, followed by whites at 28% and rosés or blush style at 12%. And the types of wines they're drinking in Japan are Merlot with 32% of the market, followed by Syrah or Syrahs, Sangiovese, Tempranillo, Carmenere, and Grenache. Japanese are a big wine market now. I thought the Chinese was the one because that's all you hear about and that's what everyone's talking about, but it isn't. It's the Japanese. So. Mm.
Well, they definitely have expensive grapes, that's for sure. That's amazing. I got to get more information. I went to a couple of sites that were referenced on the page, and they were all in Japanese, so I have a choice. I can either find English version, get it translated, or learn Japanese all of a sudden before the next
all
show.
All of a sudden.
You
can give us a report.
I don't know. It might be possible, to learn the language that fast. We'll see. Everything I went to, there's a Ruby Roman Grape Club. There's an association in that. I forgot what the town was in Japan, but there's an association there for the Ruby Roman Grape, and the references that I went to were all in Japanese, so that didn't do any good. But,
Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. I might have to. No guarantees, though.
We'll expect a report next week.
Oh, good luck with that. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we'll try. You never know. I might not have the dialect, completely mastered by then, but I think I'll have, some of the choice words, I guess. We will, speaking of next week, it will be July 31st. We'll be back. Next Thursday. We'll see you all back here on Blog Talk Radio on All About Wine. And thanks for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed the show. Comment if you'd like. Our email address, I believe, is in the outro or the exit. So we'll give it to you then. And
thank you all very much for tuning in. Yep. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. All right. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN. and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.